Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live from Crowdcast. We're live from YouTube. We're also coming to you later on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, etc., etc., etc.
Whatever you want. Whenever you want to listen is fine.
In the future, the world will be different when you...
Any way you want it, any way you need it.
Oh, I just wanted
any
to start
way you
by
want it,
saying,
that's the way you need it.
Oh, Justin, right, thank you for coming out for my birthday. It's nice to know that I have a friend.
Oh, no.
You know, Jesus. So it merely meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Also, it's great seeing Aaron and John, and I got emotional. They got me a Fudgy the Whale Carvel cake. I got a little emotional. And then also they got me a shirt that I thought I would...
As they do.
You know, that I thought I'd lost
for
forever.
The audio podcast. Let the Wookiee Win. Is that what it's
Let the Wookiee Win? My original shirt.
And that is that what is that from? Is that from Ghostbusters or one of the other movies you like?
No, it's my old, I had a shirt as a kid that was this, and they got me the shirt from my childhood.
Oh, so it's
childhood.
From the shirt. Like it's adapted.
It's a shirt based on the shirt. Okay. Shouldn't it be Let the Rookie Win?
No, it's Wookiee. Haven't you ever seen Star Wars, dude?
I feel like you're the Wookiee in this situation.
It's true.
Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah.
It's fucked up that you have a shirt that says, let Pete win.
Did you have a good birthday, Pete? I'm sorry, I wasn't there. I was
Alex was
sorry.
Sick, Pete, and you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, he was sick. You know, I know in the biz what that means, mm-hmm. You know. It's cool.
The biz? The friendship biz?
Yeah, yeah.
I had already told you I wasn't going to be there because it was my father's birthday, which I also missed because I was sick.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Pete.
Imagine if you showed up for Pete's and skipped your dad.
Yeah.
He would never have known. Wait, was my dad there?
Yes. That was the crazy.
He was drinking like crazy. That guy can throw back.
He was shit-talking you, Alex, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, he's sick. In the biz, my dad said.
Yep.
Oh, geez. Well, happy birthday, Pete. Hope you had a good one. Glad you got some presents. Before we jump into it, and we have two great guests for you, last week on the show, we had two other great guests. We had Andre Darlington, who is the writer of Gotham City Cocktails, and Brent Macris, our resident chef de cuisine, if you will.
Whoa.
And
okay.
In case you haven't been following along with
Alex's
the show,
French classes are going well.
Brett has been curating drinks from the Gotham City Cocktails cookbook. I don't know why this is still confusing for me, but
yes, you could call it a food tome.
Oh, a food tome. In any case, we are keeping going with it. We are still doing a drink this week. This week we are drinking the Gothamite, which is a classic. I'm very confused by the fact that I'm not in the window all the way over there. It's weirding me out.
Yeah, right,
but
I love
this
it.
Is a little. This is in your wheelhouse, Pete. This is a little vodka-based drink with some Cointreau, limoncello, cranberry juice, orange bitters, and I borrowed an Amarena cherry from next door.
What? Oh, that's you living some high class shit.
What?
Sure what are you in a Long Island City penthouse?
Excuse me, you have any Amarena cherries?
Yeah. I don't want any of your regular cherries. I want a maraschino cherry.
I actually live in a Whole Foods. I thought you guys knew that. I sleep in the cheese aisle most nights.
Every white person's dream, Alex, is made true.
Are you a little mouse?
I have an approximation of the cocktail. I make my own grapefruit-infused vodka, which leaving...
Just casually going to say that?
I am casually saying it. So I use some of that, very bitter.
Since when?
For years I do this. I got I have a whole cocktail situation and problem. It's got some little bit of Aperol in here, some orange bitters as requested, and a little lime.
It sounds like the one ingredient you included was orange bitters, but otherwise just went far afield.
If you can't be with the one you love, love the liquor that's currently in your bar.
That's right.
Absolutely. Love the one you're with, man. More. And if you didn't check out the show last week, the thing that's great about this cookbook is that it is set in Gotham City. Like, it's not you're drinking the Batman or anything. So it's fun. It's the sort of drink you might drink if you were in the middle of an earthquake or a Joker attack or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
A time bullet is coming for you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's bring in our guest that we're having on this week because we have two great ones. Later on the show, Jeffrey Brown is going to be here. But right now, we're going to bring in Ira Marks. He is the creator of Shark Summer, an amazing graphic novel that is out right now from Boom. Hey! Hello, Ira. How are you? Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. So let's talk about Shark Summer. This is a really fun book that just came out. It is... Are you legally allowed to say the name of the movie Jaws when talking about this book, or are we?
What are you trying to get him to do here, right now?
Alex?
I'm trying to get him in trouble.
No, that's a great question. You know what? Nobody told me not to. So Jaws.
Yes.
The book is Jaws. It's about Jaws. It's all Jaws.
Well, the idea of the book is it's set in. Kind of in the town that is shooting Jaws that summer in 1974 and sort of goes from there. And that's the starting point. Mm-hmm. But it's a Jaws stand-in. Where did that initial inspiration come from? Was it just being in love with the movie Jaws or was there some other way into the book?
I think, well, part of it is just like a lifetime love of behind the scenes stories. Like, I mean, you guys were talking about a movie called Star Wars briefly earlier.
Still haven't heard about that one.
It's on my list.
Yeah, I'm getting to it. But I, you know, like growing up there pre-internet, there was the behind the scenes content you had access to mostly, for me at least, was like really Star Wars related. So I think every movie for me from there on out came with like an urge to see the story behind the scenes. It just was like kind of built into how I thought about creativity and entertainment. And I mean, Jaws is just an iconic film and a behind the scenes adventure just seemed like a really fun place to like spend a year working on a book. Right. So it was kind of that. It was a little bit of what's the perfect movie to do kind of an adventure story. And Jaws is just like the perfect adventure story. And it makes a good pitch, right? It's like Goonies, but behind the scenes of Jaws or whatever.
Yeah.
You could kind of, you could sell it. Easy.
Yeah. Super fun. Now, did you grow up near the beach? Did you go to beach towns? Have you had a shark encounter?
No real life shark encounter. So sorry, I guess the book is like not as authentic as it really should be. But I did grow up, I grew up in upstate New York, but my family is from the Boston area. So New England beaches are, a big nostalgic.
Justin or Pete are about to ask you where in upstate New York because they both grew up there.
Oh, hell yeah. Here we go. It's the Upstate New York podcast. I'm from Northern New York, technically. I'm from a town called Sandy Creek.
I'm from, went to high school in Central Square.
Oh, sweet. Of course, I probably ran cross country against you specifically. even at
yes,
some point.
Good. I was not at the front of the pack. I will tell you that.
Me neither. We were both just tall, skinny kids at the back of it.
True. Except for tall and except for skinny. I'm right with you.
just guessing. I can only see from, zero.
I know. So. I love that you think I'm tall. I'm really, the camera's positioned perfectly.
Right.
I'm at the Tom Cruise filming level.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Framed perfectly.
Okay, so we established upstate New York. That's great.
yeah.
But let's get back to Jaws. Just how much research then did you have to do on that? Or was it just kind of knowing a little bit about the movie process and generally knowing the movie and then going off from there?
Yeah, well, I think just at some point in my life, I realized I wanted every book to be a research experience for me. Mm-hmm. I love to draw. I love to write. But I needed like that other layer of challenge, I guess, at some point. So when I had the Jaws pitch, I hadn't really developed the story much. I knew like some of the iconography, you know, there's like little, obviously there's Bruce, the mechanical shark, and how he famously like didn't work well. There's like, you know, the top five stories, you know, but then of course there's little things like, did you know that Spielberg was really using the color yellow to like evoke menace because the raft is yellow every time you see a raft, and you know, all these little like, not conspiracy theories exactly, but like patterns that people find when they watch something too much. So I started, you know, digging into that a little bit, and you know, this air of paranoia and like just little visual hints. Like if you could read the story, you could get the adventure, but I wanted there to be like kind of a deeper reading. If you've seen Jaws, there's like way more to take away. And so that led me to reading a couple books. There's this book called The Jaws Log, which is a really kind of nerdy screenwritery breakdown of like the day to day of making the film. So, you know, a lot of what the kids in the story of Shark Summer are doing behind the scenes of like the day to day of their adventure is like moments from the behind the scenes of Jaws. Like they're visiting this hotel and it's like kind of based on the hotel where Spielberg and his editor and his whole team stayed, and they made a giant mess of the place, like, but by the end of the summer, you know, there's all these little things, and that added to some of the settings and like little beats. And basically the first half of the book is kind of in the Jaws world. And then it kind of like goes on from there.
I feel like movies back then, like production was just a little messier. It felt like, you know, nowadays it feels like Marvel movies, like I'm sure there are problems, but everything feels slick and there's just so much more money involved. And back then it was like, oh no, no one showed up for some reason, or everyone got drunk last night because we're staying in Cape Cod or whatever. Like, so I love exploring that. It feels like a lost part of our filmmaking culture.
Yeah, and I really, there's an authenticity, of course, like 70s cinema is like always coined as like being the authentic era of like kind of down and gritty. And you can see it in the casting, right? It's like you're seeing all these local people. Everybody's got a sunburn and like acne scars. Yes. Everybody just looks normal. They look like people you hang out with. And then I was thinking about that with Marvel stuff the other day, watching Loki, and just I like the show, but you could feel that it was like 68 degrees in every scene. Right. Like everybody looks, nobody's sweating. There's no humidity. Jaws is like the opposite. It's sandy and wet.
We miss those authentic mistakes, and now we only focus on like, there's a water bottle in that perfectly conditioned studio you shot this in.
Yeah, that's all that's left is like to find that thing.
This is a question here for the comments. Does this book cover the making the animatronic shark? And I think it's probably important to point out this isn't a making of Jaws book necessarily. Yeah. The Jaws thing really is, I don't know, a springboard, I guess, for the rest of the story. So could you talk more about that aspect of the plot?
Okay, yeah, that's true. We just kind of blew right past what the hell this thing is in the first place.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an adventure graphic novel. It's kind of a creepy Scooby-Doo-ish mystery on just like a really base level. There's more to it than that. So it begins kind of like that iconic summer of Jaws with a group of friends kind of coming together to with the plans of making a film for this film festival to win some money to save this girl Gail's mom's ice cream shop. So it's a real like kids on an adventure, you know, riding bikes around sunsets and beaches and sarcasm and all the things that you get from like kind of a, you know, an 80s flavored kids adventure story. But I mean, the Jaws setting is kind of that extra layer of the onion. It's setting a context. I think it's just a perfect summer setting because it's such an iconic summer that's like captured on film. But it's totally fleeting. Like you could never really have that summer again, but it's somehow like, you know, captured in our imaginations, like collectively. So, you know, that's kind of the use of Jaws at a base level. But then it gets into like a weird cult backstory to the island, and then some like real deep specific history. Like if you know Martha's Vineyard, like you're going to get a lot of out of this book as well. It's not really just as much about, it's more about the island than it is about Jaws, really. Like Jaws was influenced by the island in a lot of ways, right? When they got there, like, you know, a lot of the choices were made about what the movie was going to be.
Those islands are weird, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard. They're like this weird mix of like rich people go there, but also the people that live there. It's a very dark place when it's not summertime. So like, I love that as the setting as well.
Yeah, and that's stuff. I mean, that's a lot of New England in general, right? It's like you get this one interpretation when you're a kid, but then as you get a little older, you start to see all those things differently. And I wanted, you know, this is a middle grade book. Like, of course, I want people of all ages to enjoy it, but I kind of wanted it to be about that for kids because, you know, around 10, you're kind of starting to figure that stuff out. You're like, oh yeah, these buildings had people that are now dead living in them. And like, you know, like all that kind of, you know, you see the creepy stuff first, of course, like that's the cool thing to notice. But I wanted it to be about that kind of dark gothic New England, you know, Hawthorne, like Lovecrafty bit. I wanted all those kind of flavors in there.
Yeah, why is everyone in town looking wistfully to the sea? Like they lost something here. That's when you start to really notice vacant stares.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the group of characters and what the inspiration behind them was?
You know, we've got four kids and they all kind of like fill a different element of, you know, to get like a little technical with the storytelling, like I have something I want to say with this story and I'm kind of creating these kids to like fill a point of view for it. So you have Gail, who is kind of a disgraced softball pitcher. So I wanted a character that had kind of been a hero in her own story. And I love sports fiction. Like I love Friday Night Lights and sports movies in general. So I wanted to pull a character from like a trope like that and then take it all away from her and stick her in like this kind of like adventure filmmaking story. So that's the main character that you're following. It's basically her coming of age. And then you have this kid Elijah, and he's like the kid with the camera and all the privilege. And he's the one that's kind of like, he knows what Jaws is, really. Whereas the other kids don't, because Jaws doesn't exist yet. But this kid knows like horror film, and he like gets to know one of the prop makers that's there, and he's kind of the insight into that kind of nerdy technical Jaws stuff. Like he's obsessed with his camera. He like knows who the editor on the film is and like points that out. And then you've got the kid who's the director, who reveals, like, I don't want to spoil any of it, but she pulls back the curtain on what the real story is that they're going to make their movie about, because they kind of set off without really a point. Because if you've ever sat down to like with a camera or a comic book to like tell a story, you realize, oh yeah, this is really hard. I don't know if I have anything to say. So Maddie is like the character who has something to say. And then there's Lex, who's a bit of the antagonist element. The story doesn't really have a villain because I kind of wanted it to be, you know, really real world based, but she's antagonistic to some degree. And she's like the head of the athletic team. So she's kind of the jock in a generic definition. So those are the four component kids.
Can you talk a little bit about the art style? I feel like you do a great job of capturing that sort of Goonies youth, but you talk about that coming of age moment. Like, I feel like all your characters' eyes are sort of having that like adulthood panic set in. And I just, can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, I guess I could point a lot of that back to maybe my biggest influence, like Jeff Smith and his book Bone. So if you've never read Bone, like classic cartoon fantasy adventure, a little
Justin, Lord have you heard of Bone?
Anybody Huge heard Bone of Bone? Fan.
I talk about Bone a lot to the point that Pete doesn't like to hear about it anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's my
from time. From me.
Yeah, yeah. Please, I'd love to get a fresh take on it.
Well, the Bone element that comes in, and if people listening, if you don't know what Bone is, just kind of Google a screenshot. So it's a really unique story in that there's the Bone characters. They're like extremely cartoony and a Walt Kelly, also Disney, like Donald the Duck-ish style, but they're juxtaposed with a not more realistic, but a little bit more of a grounded cartoony style. And I just thought that that really like impressed me as a kid. There, I didn't realize there was nothing else that looked like that. And if you tried to pitch a thing like that today, you wouldn't get it made because it's a weird pairing, you know?
So weird, yeah. But it works so well.
Yeah, it's kind of a Roger Rabbit thing where it's like two colliding aesthetics in a way. But, you know, a lot of the expressive way that I draw faces, I think, comes from Jeff Smith's cartoon aesthetic and the way characters can feel kind of grounded until suddenly they just burst into like a sense of realization or panic. I wanted that to be an element of my story. So it's like I have this like darker story I want to tell, but then there is this really silly urge to draw faces like in very vibrant, explosive expressions. Yeah. So that's probably my biggest influence there with the look of this.
I love to hear it. And I agree. Like so many of my favorite things are that sort of like, this is a fun thing. And it's like, actually there's this sort of hard fantasy element that is going to really draw you in and become so intense.
Yeah.
Like Adventure Time, The Last Airbender, like all those things. Yeah. It feels like, look at this fun kids show. And it's like, actually it's very serious and deep and you're trapped in it now.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of get lured in. And like Calvin and Hobbes was that like that, yes, in a way, you know. Uh-huh. you, on first glance, you're like, oh, jokes. But you're like, oh, wait, philosophy. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're in.
I love it.
Right?
I love humor. Humor's the bait. Get them.
Exactly. Totally.
So Shark Summer is out on stands and at bookstores now, or obviously you can order it online if you're still not going out to stores, which is fair. But what is next for you? What else do you want to plug, if anything?
I guess I can. No one's told me not to talk about this either. So I'll hint at it. So it's kind of a sequel in a way that it's set in the same world. It's the next year. And we follow the filmmaker kid Elijah as he travels to, we can say, like a certain hotel in the Colorado Rockies,
yes,
with like a certain
love
carpet.
It.
You know, a certain,
you're
angry,
talking
like,
about
author.
The Hilton, Colorado, which is a very nice place.
I love
breakfast.
It's a sponsored.
Mm-hmm. A haunted continental breakfast where the toaster doesn't quite work.
No, I love that. I think, you know, you were touching on that throughout the interview. And I think one of the great things about the book is that you really liberally take these things that are identifiable, explicitly Jaws, of course, but like you were calling out Goonies, Friday Night Lights, other things, but you make it feel like something fresh and new. So if you are going to do it with the Hilton Garden Inn in Colorado or perhaps some other hotel, potentially, I think that's a fun thing to keep hitting. I'm very excited to check that out.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks.
One last question from the comments. Nat Towson says, I would like to know if Ira likes the movie Super 8.
Yeah, you know what? I actually do. But I love any like Spielbergian thing. And maybe it's not a perfect movie, but it's definitely like I've seen it a billion times.
It's funny. Super 8 is one of those movies
just
that
feels good.
It was a good movie. It felt good, and that's a movie that has just vanished from the conversation. It's weird.
I think it was just the wrong time for J.J. Abrams specifically, where everybody had turned the corner against him. So
it's a little redundant. Maybe it doesn't have a whole lot to say. We could, you know, I don't know, but it's fun. It feels good. Yeah. It's popcorn.
Good production value.
Good production train crash. Yeah. Love a good train crash.
True. Yeah.
Ira, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the book.
Yeah.
Thanks,
looking
guys.
Forward to the
nice
next
to
one.
Meet you. Yeah.
All right.
Great talking to you.
Bye.
Great book.
All right. Once again, that is Ira Marks. The book is called Shark Summer. It's out from Little Brown and Company right now. And as we mentioned, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We enjoy it. And it's pretty much all ages. It's like YA level a little bit. So if you're looking for something that you can hand to older kids or older adults, either way, that's out.
Hand it to an older adult. Hey, Grandpa, here's a picture book.
Oh, thank you.
Alex's dad's going to love it if he can just get off this bender he's been on since Pete's birthday.
Jesus Christ. He's like right over there right now just partying, and I'm just like, Dad, calm down.
Dad, I'm doing my podcast.
Dad, stop it. I'm doing my podcast. We're going to bring in our next guest.
Stupid podcast.
Jeffrey Brown. He is the creator of Total Waste of Space Time, which is out now from Crown Books. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey Brown, hello.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm excited to talk about this. But before we get into the book, it's been fascinating to watch your career. Obviously, probably fascinating for you, too, to experience it.
Yeah.
But
It's actually kind of boring for me. But
oh, it's boring because you lived it.
Like, yeah, it's like,
you're continuing to live it.
Well, but you started off with this very confessional, personal comic creator, and now you're the Star Wars guy. Like, you're... what has it been? I mean, you are more than that, and we are going to talk about more than that, but I think that's kind of amazing to see it go from these very small comics that we love to these huge comics that we also love. So what has this experience been like for you?
Yeah, it's strange because I think drawing Star Wars was one of the childhood dreams I had. And the way I came into it, like, I couldn't have planned. And it came from the autobiographical work for adults. And it just kind of naturally, like, everything is just kind of, I just kind of like, oh, well, I guess this is what I'll do next. And and I just kind of have been following things and like whatever I feel like doing. So yeah, it's weird to make the jump from like my first book, Clumsy, which is like explicit adults relationships, not for kids, and then like, you know, doing the stuff like A Total Waste of Space Time, which is middle grade and definitely for kids, and like the contrast between those two seems like a lot. But then if you follow things like, you know, the ChangeBots Transformers parody I did, like even Darth Vader and Son, you know, kind of walks the line between being for kids and adults. And so it, like, from book to book or project to project, it seems more natural. But yeah, it's weird to like think about it's even weird, like, you like to hear people swear on the podcast. I'm like, wait, I'm an adult, I can do that. Like, I'm so used to, like, you know, you go to an elementary school to give a talk, and it's just like being a different person sometimes. So
we do the same thing. We do the podcast regularly at elementary schools, and we curse up a storm. It's it's disgusting.
We usually get thrown out.
Yeah,
teachers are like, "Why did I invite you here?"
That all said, it's interesting to hear you bring up Amazing ChangeBots, because that was the big thing that sort of came to mind immediately on reading A Total Waste of Space Time, because it feels like there is a direct connection there. This is the, I believe, second book in the series. Yep. It is very fun. It is very creative. Yes. Oh, you got both of them there. Talk about the basic concept of the book for anybody who might not have picked it up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, so the first book starts out, you know, it's just introducing Jide and Petra to humans on Earth. And it's a set in the future when we've been visited by aliens. And the first book kind of sets them up to travel to Mars, where they meet the other kid astronauts, but, you know, they're kids, but they're aliens. And so then they end up on the spaceship with minimal adult supervision. It's basically robots, and then there's one human astronaut, and there's Toby the alien, who is not super responsible, I guess. And the second book is they're kind of taking a tour and visiting everyone's home planets. So yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of more along the lines of like a Star Trek kind of idea, where, you know, just exploring the galaxy for exploration's sake. I wanted to take a break from, you know, having the fate of the universe hanging in the balance all the time, and you know, like, it's interesting enough to go, you know, visit a black hole or something.
Well, that's one of the things that I really like about the book, is that it is these chapter stories that you're hitting throughout it versus epic stakes in the end of the universe. Where along the line did that choice happen? Was there a point when maybe you would take these characters and think, okay, we are going to do a multi-part epic adventure, and then it got reduced, or was this always where it lived?
Yeah, I think I always wanted it to be kind of more episodic, and, you know, just, you know, have the opportunity to like kind of focus on little jokes and again, like, not worry about like the kind of the like this grand epic thing. Although for them, it, you know, like there, it's their adventure, so it is kind of epic, I guess. But and there is maybe like a little bit of a plot of, you know, them traveling and maybe they get lost or something. But, you know, I just really just wanted to like just draw some funny ideas I had about exploring space. And so, yeah, it seemed like this was a good vehicle for that.
From a humor perspective, how do you sort of modulate the jokes? Are you writing them out and just being like, here's what I think is funny, and then being like, ah, that one's a little, that's not quite right, that one's a little too old or the wrong reference or something like that, and then you go back through, or is it just like you're in that frame of mind from the beginning?
It's a little bit all over the place. So, you know, I have like a notebook that'll have lots of ideas, and like I have some ideas for jokes, like in the first book you find there's this cat, but the cat is actually a mouse that's been genetically modified by the aliens, but they genetically modified it so that it is genetically a cat. So like, that was just like this idea I had, and I was like, oh, that'll fit in here. And then sometimes, you know, so I'll have ideas like that, and I kind of go through as I'm figuring out what the story will be, like where different jokes can fit in. And then I'll also know, like, here's a place in the story where I need there to be some joke, but I don't know the joke yet. And I'll literally, in the rough draft, I might just write in the panel, just in parentheses, joke. And then, you know, instead of trying to, like, bang my head against the wall, figuring out the joke right then. And then as I, like, you know, work on it, and then, you know, the idea might come later. So it's just, and then it's, you know, my editor sometimes would come through and she would say, you know, like this, I don't really get this. And I was like, no, that's funny. Like, I'm leaving it in there. And then other times, like she would say that and I'd be like, oh yeah, I know. But yeah. I'm still trying to like think of like the better joke. And until I think of a better joke, I'll just leave that one there. So it's just, yeah, it's a, you know, I try to, you know, be in the mindset, but it's, you know, still like a process of, especially, you know, like they're trying to come up with four or five jokes per page. It's a lot of jokes.
Well, and it's, I love hearing that, 'cause I feel like so many people who consume comedy maybe don't know that it is that sort of like beat. You're always trying to just beat your jokes. And everyone's like, oh, it's all one thing. It's like, actually, no, it's like 50 things. I'm just trying to raise the level on each of them as I'm going through.
Yeah.
I mean, similarly, talking about sci-fi tropes when you're hitting stuff like that, I'm curious, you probably know very well from comic book fans that people could be real jerks about internal consistency and things like that. Are kids the same way? Or do you find there's a little more leeway in terms of, it's okay if the robot does this one time and it does this other thing another time?
Weirdly, like they're both, like, because kids can be like brutally honest, and like when I did my Neanderthal series, the series I was working on before Space Time, which was, I did a lot of research and there's a lot of like factual information built into the books. And, you know, kids would write and like, actually, this is like what Neanderthals, blah, blah, blah. And like, and then I, you know, it's like, no, I did the research. Like the current understanding is this. And so like, but then at the same time, yeah, kids will like, they'll, you know, they're able to suspend disbelief. It's like, you know, it's like I have two sons, one's 14 and one's 8, and I'll read with them at bedtime. And the 8-year-old is just like, whatever goofy, fun thing. And I'm reading with my 14-year-old, and it's like every page, he's like, wait, that doesn't make sense because of this and this. And yeah, so like kids, they like, the readers for the age group of middle grade, they seem to like, they kind of vacillate back and forth between like being totally like okay with anything goes, and then like, wait a minute, like that in way back in 20 pages before this is the thing, so you messed that up.
I love that you've managed to have like the perfect ages of your target group in your family. You can hit both sides by going between different bedrooms.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good test market I've got, like, because I can, yeah. It's like, okay, like I bring the fart jokes here, and then like, like the more subtle, like, you know, the jokes about the AI over here.
I love the idea of you sitting down with both your kids and focus grouping this, like, okay, fart joke for sir, for you, and this will be coming a little bit more for you over here.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of other things you're working on at the same time, in addition to A Waste of Space Time. One of the things you're working on, a Batman project, I believe.
Yeah. So, and I think it's just about wrapped up. I can show you a little little sneak peek that I think it's in the back of one of the other DC Kids books that came out, but it's called Batman and Robin and Howard. And so it's, of course, you know, there's Batman, Caped Crusader, Defender of Gotham, and secretly billionaire Bruce Wayne, and then in my story, Robin is Damian Wayne, Bruce's son, and yes. Damian gets sent to this new school where there's just this kid Howard. So that's it.
I love it.
Yeah, so Howard is kind of like the all-star, and then of course Damian shows up, and Damian's like, you know, like, I'm a superhero, I'm the all-star, and they kind of start out as rivals, and then you know, have to figure out how to work together, and with the Batman side of it, it was like just kind of thinking about like how my kids view me. And it's like, it's like I can do things like I'm on a comic book podcast talking about books I made. And my kids are like, yeah, whatever, Dad, you're not cool. Like, you are not, you're not as cool as you think you are. And so I thought like, it'd be really funny to see Batman through Damian's eyes of like, it's like, no, my dad's Batman, but he's a total goofball. Like, he's so awkward. And yeah, so it's fun to kind of work with those characters. And yeah, that'll be out in November.
This is a question from Nat in the comments here. And I actually have a follow-up question about it. He says, I'm curious how Jeff now feels about the brutal honesty of his earlier memoir work. And I'm curious, in a reverse of what we talked about earlier, do you find any of your younger readers have aged up enough where then they look back and say, hey, I found this book you wrote called Clumsy. And then they start reading that.
Yeah, I haven't yet. It's weird. Like, it's mostly, it's like the people who read the autobiographical work when it was coming out have grown up and now have kids. And so they're reading all the kids' books with their kids. So, so far I haven't seen it go the other way really, but, and it's weird because it's, I mean, I think it's just those books, even before I started doing kids stuff, it was weird how they would find their audience. Like, people would just kind of know, like, pick them up and like, know, like, this is something that's going to speak to me, or like, no, nope, this isn't my thing. And yeah, I feel looking back, I don't know how I made those books. Like, I don't feel like I can make things the same way. I mean, obviously now it's different, you know, having kids and like writing about them is much different than writing about like someone you're just dating for a few months or something. But I don't know. For me, those books were always just about the point of being brutally honest was just to like put it all out there and to show like how flawed we all are and accept that, like, both for myself and hopefully like if you're reading it, like, you can learn something about yourself maybe. But you know, so I think I don't know how they hold up. I guess we'll see, because next year actually Top Shelf is collecting the three relationship books in a single volume. So we'll see how how that
see what
goes.
The people say.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know.
When you were saying you feel like you can't do that anymore, do you mean because you can't be that expositional in something like that?
I think part of it is just I've been doing kids stuff for so long. Like, I've been doing mostly kids books for the past like almost 10 years now. And so it's just, my mindset has gone more than that. And, and it makes sense because I have kids. And so I'm like reading books with them and like I'm around them. And so it wasn't like a conscious decision, like, no, I'm going to do this other thing. So Like I've tried to start writing a little more, getting back into that autobiographical writing in my sketchbook at least. And it's just a different mindset. And then also I don't know if I'm ready to write about the things that I would write about. So like the last autobiographical book I did was about my dad and religion, and my dad was a minister, and it was just kind of these thoughts and that was like the last thing. I was like, okay, I know what I kind of want to write about. And so it's one of those things where I try not to, I don't want to force that. And so someday maybe I'll like something will click and I'll get back to that way of thinking. But for now, it's just, yeah, goofy aliens and Star Wars.
I also feel like when you're a parent, especially of like younger kids, you're sort of always in the middle. It's hard to have those like you're saying, mm-hmm. like these big like complete thoughts, because it's like, well, there's all the stuff that's always actively going on. So yeah, how do you have a complete thought about parenting when you're like literally doing it constantly?
Yeah. And like your thoughts change for like every couple of months, 'cause like the kids change, and like, it's weird. Like, you know, I'm like watching Loki with my 14-year-old and it's like, sometimes I'll figure out like a movie that, like we watched Gladiator or something, you know, it's just like, and it's, so it's weird to watch things with him differently. And then my younger son, like, wasn't into Adventure Time for a while. We just started watching Adventure Time, which I'd watched with my older son. And, you know, it's just, so it's, and it, but it's like month to month, week to week, like things change so much. And, you're finding the time to like, be reflective on that once they're off in college, then I can
future project
write something to embarrass them.
Yeah, brutally honest about your children once they're out of the house.
On the flip side of things, though, you also have something new Star Wars coming out.
There is a new Star Wars book coming out too, and it's a Vader family Sithmas. So there's like Luke and Leia. It's maybe mostly Christmas, but it's not specifically Christmas, but you know, it's a lot of holidays. There's some, you know, classic Christmas jokes but just more about like the holiday season and lots of scenes on Hoth and things. But yeah, it's I've slowed down on the Star Wars books, but you know, it's still always fun to play in that universe. So
yeah, I mean, my son's 8, he loves them. He's been reading them for years. They're great. He's super into them. So they're definitely hitting the right demographic. That's the important thing. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. The book is great. There going to be more in the series beyond the second one here?
So for now, this is like the last for now. So, you know, it's like another one of those things where part of it is just burnout. Like I was doing between the Neanderthal books and Space Time, it was just like a full 256 page book every year plus whatever else I was working on. And so I was kind of hitting a wall, and then it didn't help that the pandemic hit right when the first book came out. So it's like the series maybe hasn't sold as well. And so I'm like, we'll see if I can revisit it. So there's plenty of room with the characters. I mean, like I said, it's kind of inspired by like the idea of Star Trek, where you get to explore the vast universe. And I have a whole sketchbook full of ideas, but I'm not in any particular rush to work on those necessarily, but yeah.
Well, cool. Awesome. Jeff, again, thank you so much for coming on. Have a good night.
Yeah, thanks.
Great talking to you.
All right. Great stuff.
All right. Once again, that was Jeffrey Brown. The name of the book is A Total Waste of Space Time. It's out right now from Crown Books. And as mentioned, it's a lot of fun. Also, check out all the other things he does. Darth Vader and Son, this upcoming Batman and Robin and Howard book from DC. That sounds like super fun too.
Idea. I love that.
And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your...
There it is.
All right.
If you thought the sound is playing, it's definitely not, but that's fine.
No, it's not.
It's not playing.
I had a little bit of a sound problem right before.
I like that you were moving on as if it was playing. You moved on as if it was playing. I love it.
There we go. Very excited about all that. And, you know what's tough, you guys?
What's
you know
that?
What's tough? When people don't really, like, pick up on your, you know, subtle hints, that's really tough. Like, whether there's subtle hints that you're segueing from the show portion of your podcast to an ad for this week's sponsor, or subtle hints that maybe you're a little hairy down there. It's tough when your friends don't pick up on what you're laying down. But luckily, I have a solution for all those problems. This week's sponsor, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0.
I'm still confused. Was this Miss Sound Cue as part of this, or is it not?
Let me help you out. The Performance Package 4.0 includes the incredible Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, and two free gifts, Performance Boxer Briefs and the Shed Travel Bag.
Wow. Okay, I think I'm starting to get it. The Lawnmower 4.0 is the one with 7,000 RPM motor, 4,000K LED spotlights, and so much more, right?
Oh, sure is, Pete.
And you can tell Pete's being natural when he gets his face right up to the screen.
And the
Weed Whacker has a 9,000 RPM motor. That's a lot of Rip'ems, if you know what I'm talking about. A dual blade system with proprietary skin-safe technology. Proprietary. Oh,
now you guys are getting it.
The deodorant and the briefs also have motors.
Oh, you were so close, Pete. You almost got it.
But then no motors. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped.
All right.
All right. And now it's time for your audience questions. And for audience questions, this is pretty straightforward. You guys know how this works. If you're over on YouTube, drop a question in the comments over there and I'll take a look for them. Over on Crowdcast, I see a bunch of questions already in Ask a Question. If you haven't gotten one in, feel free to do so. But first, Justin and I talked about what we were drinking. Pete, what are you drinking tonight?
Oh, well, I'm having a little bit of the huge. You know, a little bit of the old John Daly, if you will.
That's the cocktail you order at the bar, the huge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Ernie Palmer with some vodka. Ooh, oh, Miller look at High you. Life. Nice. Champagne and beers.
Whew. Excellent.
Miller High Life, baby.
All right, let's go to some questions here. This is from Josh over on Crowdcast. What is everyone's favorite shark? Apropos of Shark Shummer.
Senator Shark Schumer. favorite shark, a lot of options out there. You go with a scary one or a less scary one.
I'm gonna
throw out the hammerhead. Funny, weird shark.
Oh, you were going type of shark.
Yeah,
not shark. Oh, saying, character.
Yeah, I'm gonna that, go,
I don't know, I was thinking like King Shark or something like that, but
yeah, and the Harley Quinn animated series, that's the best shark I've seen, so that's what I'm going with.
I thought you were going to say Jabberjaw, Pete, is what you really should have said.
Yeah. No, I'm getting flashbacks. I feel like we answered this question just a couple of weeks ago.
We did. and that's why I was saying type of shark.
Oh, okay. And I think back then I also said baby shark, not a reference to the song, but actually like the baby sharks that they have at the New York Aquarium are very cute.
Yes. Are you a frequent aquarium visitor?
I am a pretty frequent aquarium visitor.
Yeah, you bring it up a lot.
I love going to the aquarium. There's not a lot to do there. It's a very small aquarium, but usually we make a day of it. We go to Coney Island, start out at the aquarium, go down the boardwalk, eat at Nathan's. We used to go to the amusement areas, but now
you
those
get at
are...
Nathan's?
What do you get at Nathan's? I get two hot dogs. Oh, this is going to be a problem. This is a problem every time we talk about this.
Yes, it is.
Two hot dogs, mustard and sauerkraut.
Wow.
My kids get lemonade. I'll usually have a sip or two of the lemonade. They get some crinkle fries because
I was
going to
say, you better
fries.
Get some goddamn crinkle
of
fries.
Of course, they're great. So I have a couple of those, but my order is the two hot dogs.
Good choice. And Pete, what is on your trash hot dog?
You know what it is. Ketchup and mustard. You know what I mean? You disgusting. Do a little stripey.
What a man who, like, what a man who doesn't make choices in his life chooses ketchup and mustard.
No, you gotta choose it together.
Choose a side.
I get it on my cheeseburgers. I get it on my hot dogs. I love it.
You get ketchup and mustard on cheeseburgers?
That's right.
Grow up. Make some choices in your life. What are you talking about?
No, you can just enjoy all the flavors you want. That's the beautiful thing about life.
Of course, whatever you're into,
you go right ahead.
A man who eats garbage plates is, of course, a human trash can and doesn't care what goes in his mouth.
Ketchup and mustard, also on that. So,
of course, because it's whatever's in the garbage.
Quick question here.
A hot dog should be topped with mustard and relish.
We did have a quick question here about the amusement parks at Coney Island. This is for New York fans only, but they changed the thing at the amusement park, so now you have to prepay admission versus paying per ride. Because of COVID, ostensibly, and then they jacked up the price of admission like another $20 over the summer. So it's more expensive to go for a day at the teeny tiny theme park at Coney Island than it is for like a day at Great Adventure, and it's not worth it.
Well, it will be a lowercase g Great Adventure going to Coney Island.
Great question mark adventure.
Wow, Nat in the comments dropping some Coney Island knowledge. Luna Park versus Dino's as the
sure. I'm talking about Luna Park, Nat, not Dino's. Dino's is still paper ride. Sarah without an H says, "Come to Hershey Park." Guess what? I'm going to be there this weekend. So done.
Ooh, Alex going out to PA for some fun.
Sure am. I'm going to swing right past Pete. I don't have time. I'm sorry. And go straight to Hershey.
It's all right. Well, your dad's popping into Pete's place.
No, it's actually for my son's birthday. We are taking him to Hershey Park for the weekend.
So. Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Have a chocolate birthday. This is from Kevin. What's a comic?
Or a chocolate martini while you're there.
I was looking at some of those drinks at Hershey Park. They look so sweet and so gross. They have a old-fashioned with a Reese's peanut butter cup in it.
These are the drinks you've been talking about for years.
Yeah, I know. I was joking about it, and Hershey Park was like, oh, yeah, fucker? Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Prove it. Put your money where your mouth is, asshole.
The Salbin Challenge. Yeah. Drink all this poison you've been pushing.
Kevin says, what's a comic or comic-adjacent property that you go to when other parts of your life get you down?
Ooh. This is a sort of an easy answer, but I just go random pull from the old box. Mm-hmm. I go into my massive stockpile of comics and I'll just do a random pull. Oh. Instant nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I just went through a couple boxes that I found at my old house and found all these old, like the Batman, the 10 cent adventure, which was tipping off Bruce Wayne Murderer and that whole Sacha Bordeaux stuff that I talk about a ton on this podcast. And just finding those issues, I was like, this is glorious.
Pete, what about you? What's your comfort comic?
I usually will go with, it really depends on my mood, like what I'm looking for. You know what I mean? If I'm looking for a pick-me-up or if I'm looking for a good cry, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'll go with Why the Last Man or Too Cool to Be Forgotten. For sure. Book Hunter, also a feel-good one for me. I Kill Giants. Yeah, that's a good one too, Nat. But as far as like property, I might just kind of like be like, oh, I'm going to throw on the, fucking Planet Hulk. What's the goddamn thing I'm trying to think of in the movie?
World War Hulk?
No. And the movie that was fun, the Thor one, where it was not
Ragnarok.
Yes, Ragnarok. Thank you.
So not a book, really.
Well, I was trying to do both. I was trying to answer both because it was.
Appreciate it.
I probably Superman for All Seasons always makes me very wistful, but I think I just, like the rest of us, I have boxes of the comics that I've had as kids, and if I really wanted something with comfort. Anything in there, like those original runs of Excalibur, Alpha Flight, New Mutants, X-Men, like prime Chris Claremont era, that sort of thing. Just going through those boxes and discovering stuff and pulling out a couple of issues and reading them. Great.
Just smelling the smell. Of course, small favors.
Yes, of course. That's a different sort of comfort. This is from Ramsey Hassan over on YouTube. James Gunn's Suicide Squad is dropping this weekend. What MCU filmmaker would you like to make which DC property, LOL?
Ooh, interesting. MCU filmmaker, DC Comics property.
I think you could probably pull Peyton Reed off the Ant-Man movies pretty easily and throw him on like a Detective Chimp movie or a Blue and Gold movie or something like
Captain
that.
Captain Carrot, something like that.
Booster Gold and... Yeah, or Captain Carrot, something fun. I bet he could do that. That's an easy one-to-one.
Captain Carrot, who wants it? Who wants it?
Pete? Somebody out there loves it. He keeps showing up.
But he could also do, like, what was it, Shadow Watch? Is that the name of the group that was
pretty Shadow just... Pact.
Shadow Pact. I think he could kind of do a fun Shadow Pact movie because that's such a weird.
I'd love to see Jon Favreau do a Shadow Pact movie. That would be awesome.
You'd love to see Jon Favreau do anything.
That's true.
I'd love it for it. He tap dances through your dreams every night.
Man, that person, improv, loves to do a little improv, keep things fresh. That guy knows what he's doing.
What else? Justin, any ideas? Any directors you want to see cross the road?
Just. Slide across the road. I mean, I don't know. It's I want a good Superman movie. Is what I want, and I don't know if that's in who. I feel like we need something, a whole new vision here.
I mean, this is another one-to-one, but getting Joe Johnston. I don't know if you'd consider him a Marvel director, but like. Get him on a classic Superman movie and he'd kill it. He'd do a great job because he always kills it when he does stuff like that.
I think that's good.
I think we covered it. We got a good one here from a listener named Luana Nana. She says, my mom is visiting next week and wants to watch Comic Book Club with me. Is this the worst idea in the world or just medium bad? She is generally cool, but also kind of old and also my mom.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a great question, and I think we'll all have the same perspective on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have the same perspective, I think. Let us know what she's watching, and we'll be on what is collectively known as our best behavior.
Mm-hmm. this is weird because it's like her mom's going to be visiting town, and part of me thinks maybe I should not do the show and spend time with them both. If that's the better thing to do, or on my best behavior on the live show. You know what I mean?
We are great with moms, Pete. You know that.
100%. And honestly, Pete, when Laurence Olivier's partner mom was in town, he didn't skip a show.
Do you think he should, though?
He did his best. He did his art. He practiced his art so that all could see it. So bring it.
Who is the sponsor next week? That's a good question.
It's still going to be ball trimmers and goddamn what you call it.
No, I think next week it's
going to be wedding rings. Zales is sponsoring next week. Is that a problem?
That's all right.
They came to us. They came to us.
You tell us what you want us to do. We'll really plus you up, Pete.
Yeah, great. Talk you up. It'll be all ball bag commercials, and I'm sure
we want to do. We will not sell you down the river on this one.
I have a feeling you will.
I absolutely would not.
Yeah. No, Pete, you can be the hero of the Manscaped commercial.
Whoa.
That's appropriate. Get nasty talk out of here, you two.
You guys, grow up. I'm an adult. Was this your Sweet 16 that I missed this week, or what's going on? Pete?
What does that mean?
You had your birthday. Was it your Sweet 16? Oh. I don't remember.
I'm not. I'm not as young and beautiful as I used to be.
In my eyes.
Sorry, I missed it. I was at your quinceanera though, and that was lovely. Yeah. This is from Zachary H over on YouTube. What Star Wars characters would you base your children's book around?
Ooh, nice.
Chewbacca, no question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would happen in that Chewbacca?
Chewbacca would learn about killing people and how, if you rip somebody's arms off, there's consequences,
That's an important lesson that every kid needs to learn.
A young Salacious B. Crumb learns what it's like to to get a job on a pleasure barge.
Oh man. I think I would probably write Watto's first Hanukkah.
Wow, nice. Touch it. Wow.
I mean, write that down. That's that's a fun idea.
Yeah, I would write that too. Yeah. Great question. This is from Edward Doherty.
If the Watto's first Hanukkah, I feel like, is what's happening right after the movie ends. Or he's like, what?
Hey, there's a eight nights. Hey.
If the CBC story was turned into Image United jam comic, who would draw each of your individual parts? Additionally, could you ask Pete why he gets so embarrassed when you ask to talk about shaving his scrotum? I want to take the second question first. Here's the thing. Pete's not embarrassed about it. He loves talking about it, which was very confusing to me.
Yeah.
Very surprising. Almost too much. We have to write him out of a lot of the...
Yes.
Well, I was very happy with the... The lawnmower 4.0, yeah, and the light and everything, it works nice. So I was pumped to talk about it. But then these two old fogies were like, we don't use anything near a ball sack.
That was a really good impersonation of both of us.
Yeah, that is how we sound.
If the CBC story was turned into an Image United jam comic, who would draw each of your individual parts?
I want Jim Lee to draw my pouches.
You do wear a lot of pouches.
Yeah. So many pouches.
You gotta have it.
I'd have Todd McFarlane because there's always chains that are holding me down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
That's a good point.
I guess Eric Larson, because he would just keep drawing for the rest of his life.
He does draw tight shirts, and you like to rock a lot of tight shirts.
100%. Yeah. I am a savage dragon.
To be fair, if you're watching the video version, it would probably be Rob Liefeld because you can't see any of our feet.
That's true.
This is a dream job for Rob Liefeld.
Absolutely. Yeah. Rob Liefeld launches a new comic called Video Podcast. Nelson Martinez says, if you guys had Taskmaster's ability, which three fighting styles from any superhero would you mimic to bring to your fighting arsenal?
Wow. Good call. Oof. Fighting styles. Yeah, that is a tough one because who has a truly distinct fighting style?
So I have a question about Taskmaster. And I don't know the answer to this because he's always mimicking people like Spider-Man, so he's leaping like Spider-Man, or Captain America, so he's throwing the shield like Captain America. What would happen if Taskmaster tried to mimic, say, Batman? Because Batman knows every fighting style and could adapt to any fighting style. So what does he do there?
I would argue that Batman behaves a bit like a Taskmaster, like he is always in the moment. And that's why I think Spider-Man is a good answer because... always improvising in the moment, being able to be that
just
reactive.
Like Jon Favreau.
Oh, so your Taskmaster would be Jon Favreau.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He does a lot of, I hate, he's more of a mugging style when it comes, when the camera lands on him, he's like, goink.
I would hope it would be, you know, the Hulk, so that way you can do that, like, badass thunderclap move, you know?
Well, I don't know if he could do that. He could clap like the Hulk, but he can't do the thunderclap because he doesn't have those muscles.
Yeah, I guess Galactus would be the best fighting style, so he could just eat the whole planet.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I'm quite sure that's how his powers work, but all right. Pete, would you do, just to do three MCU characters, so Foggy Nelson, Happy Hogan, and Microchip, or like who's the third one?
No, Microchip's your guy. Don't put that on me.
Whoa, Taskmaster's sitting style is epic.
His tie is a little loose, just like a little loose, and he's very frazzled.
Sitmaster.
Cool. Good question. This is from Nat Townsend. Who are your favorite artists who have started with indie autobio work and then gone mainstream? Well, I'd have to say Jeffrey Brown.
Yeah.
Good. Very good.
Topical. I
mean, that's a hard, you don't see a lot of that, I feel like. Yeah, that was the test from Nat. I mean, we talked about Bone earlier. I mean, that book went from an indie book to a much more mainstream book. It was an Image book for a long time before it went back to cartoon books. So I think that also passes Nat's weird test.
Also, Chris Hastings, because he used to be a doctor and a ninja for a while. And that's where he got his start.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't have an answer. I already said Joker. This is from Scott Carpenter. He said over on YouTube, the line of new Scott Snyder comics has me rethinking comiXology. What's something that's made you question your morals? It's a weird way of phrasing it.
Moral.
But, I will. So for those of you who haven't caught up with this news, Scott Snyder teased it quite a bit when he was on our show a couple of months back at this point, I think.
Yeah.
When it was on the live show, but
talked about a big announcement, and it was a big announcement.
Huge. Best Jacket, his self-pub line, has signed a deal with comiXology and Dark Horse, where he is going to publish 8, I believe, new comic books with top-tier artists that he's worked, some that he's worked with before, some new folks, like he's working with Greg Capullo. I'm honestly blanking on the rest of the names because that is like the top line thing.
It's truly, you said Greg Capullo, Francisco Villa, Jock. It's truly a lot of artists he's worked with in the past that he just loves and wanted to do.
And these are all, because Amazon owns comiXology, they are getting a very brief first look deal at his work, but they don't automatically go into development of Prime Video or anything like that. It's mostly comics first. He can develop them in other media, but it's all his rights. The thing that was most surprising to me about that news, which I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it certainly felt that way, was that Scott is writing all of that stuff. Like, I expected him to be like, and we've got Charles Soule doing a book, and we've got this other guy doing a book, and Mariko Tamaki's doing a book, and whoever else we've signed on to do this stuff, and we've got these great teams. But nope, it's all Scott and artists, which is wild.
Yeah. That guy's going to be busy for a while.
Pablo says, I bet he'd read them long ago. Maybe. I don't think he has a secret stash of 8 ongoing comics necessarily.
Yeah. Let me throw out Paul Pope as a Nat Towson answer of indie comic guy who went mainstream.
Jumping over here to Stray Bullet's question, given the Jaws caused a huge shark backlash and set sharks to be viewed as humanity's enemy, do we have a responsibility to how we depict sharks, lions, predator animals, so people don't actively hunt the shit out of them?
Hmm. I mean, Shark Week just occurred recently, and I think that is one of the wildly most popular things on cable. So I think people are obsessed with sharks, and
Sharknado is a great example of that,
of shark obsession. I don't know if that's helping sharks in a lot of ways.
It's definitely not helping tornadoes.
Yeah. I do think, I don't think people, a lot of people are hunting sharks. I think people are scared of sharks unrealistically, but at the same time, there are increased news items about shark attacks. So the stress level is higher, I think.
I think it depends. I mean, yes, there is a certain responsibility to present this stuff responsibly, but at the same time, I think you need to trust the audience at least a little bit. Like something like Jaws, yes, it did create a panic, but that's not 100% Steven Spielberg's fault or Jaws's fault or anything like that, because they presented it as one massive shark who is attacking people as a beach. They weren't like, this is a true story documentary scenario or anything like that. There are films that have done much worse, that have tried to cause panic in people and have tried to play off that. But instead, what something like Jaws is trying to do is just like play off basic fears of the unknown. Like, what is under the water? We don't necessarily know. What if it's something that's going to bite your legs off, you know? So again, it's a fine line, and everybody's going to view it differently. So nobody is going to have the same answer about anything. But I think ultimately you got to let people do what they're going to do in terms of art, but also try to think about it as responsibility as you're doing it. And hopefully that is executed in the right way.
Yeah. And I mean, the real villain of Jaws are people. The name of that movie shouldn't be Jaws. It should be Bureaucracy.
Yeah, it should be The Mayor.
Yeah, exactly. The real threat.
It should be, what are you all running from? Yourselves?
Yeah. Good.
We got two quick last questions here. This is from Pablo DiMartinez. Why is there not a trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home or that Matrix sequel yet? I mean, they're both coming out in December, so there's still time. We don't need... trailers this early necessarily. I know Spider-Man fans are losing it because people keep saying, great news, the Spider-Man trailer is coming next week, and then it doesn't. But, like, it'll come out, and then you'll see the movie. I don't know. I don't want to dismiss people, but I don't know how much it matters. Yeah, don't dismiss people.
Well, and also I feel like Marvel's very careful with their hype train. Mm-hmm. And the hype train just finished up at a pretty exciting couple of stations with Loki and Black Widow. Like, it's pulling into Spider-Manville in a second, everybody.
Yeah, and there is the whole tricky thing with it's Sony and Marvel at the same time, and they're not exactly at odds, but they want different things. So there's a lot of moving pieces and coordination. It'll probably come out soon.
And the marketing budget for these movies is almost as big as the budget for the movie. So definitely people are calculating this to be to releasing at a time when it will have the biggest impact on everyone, including us. So
absolutely. And same thing with The Matrix. I think they just don't want people. They want whatever the first view of The Matrix 4 is. That needs to be something groundbreaking. Like, it needs to be something that's like, this is why we made The Matrix 4.
But that movie was made by robots because they're trying to take over.
Yeah, no, it's propaganda. It's
a spoiler, dude.
So that's bad. That one's bad.
Don't see Matrix 4.
And the Spider-Man No Way Home was actually made by spiders, which is also bad. Oof. This last question here is a
great eye. Great eye. Multiple eyes.
Follow up from Luana Nana. Follow up. Which of your moms have watched Comic Book Club?
Oh, wow.
I was home for the 4th of July and stayed upstate for a while. I learned my mom listens to every episode.
What?
Right now. I was like, what? Why? Mom.
Oh, my God. Mom. Hi, Mrs. Tyler.
Thanks for listening.
I got
you have a great son.
I got to imagine she's tuning out a little bit. But, or at least I hope.
Wow. Does she have notes for you? Is that how you finally found out? Or is she like,
no notes. No notes.
How did you stumble across that?
I think she just throws it on. It's just like white noise. Like,
just sleep by.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just to hear your voice.
But yeah, I was very surprised to hear that. And let me be honest, she said it, and I was like, that's weird. But didn't change my behavior at all.
Man, I don't. My mom. How long have we been doing the show? Like almost 15 years at this point, something like that.
Longer than that, of course.
Longer than that. When I mentioned it to my mother, hey, it's Tuesday, I'm going to be doing the Comic Book Club show. Still, 15 years in, it's like blank stare.
Wow.
Has no idea what it is.
My mom always asks me the next day, "How was the comic book show?" Oh, it was good, Mom. Well,
I forget your mom is only 4 inches tall. Yep.
Hey, Pete, I'm in your pocket. How was the show? Can you give me a tiny little sandwich? Just a nubbin of bread, please.
Yes, to Edward Doherty's question, does Justin's mom want a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics? Yes, she's definitely first-hand up, mom,
her up
coming through.
All right, folks, we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Do we have a person, or are we?
We sure do. I'm going to bring him into the stream right now.
Been a lot of heat in this episode of Comic Book Club.
All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news.
And our guest here, whoa!
Hey, what's up?
Hey.
Look at this. It's Nat Lificent himself.
Yeah, burdened with glorious purpose.
It's Loki, not Maleficent.
Loki. Getting real glorious Maleficent purpose. Vibes.
It's from Maleficent 2. I never threw this away after Comic-Con 2018.
Mistress of Evil?
Know. I haven't seen it.
There's a giant rat that just ran across your bed.
I do feel something of a misunderstood villain sometimes. I don't know, with relation to this show. So I felt it was an appropriate outfit.
Absolutely.
I think it is.
I don't know. Certain people are disproportionately angry at me sometimes.
Well, winning this gift card will really change all that.
Yeah. All right. Pete, take it away.
All right. Today's trip is on topical comic news. And a small nod to legend Jackie Mason. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Question number one.
Hey, real quick, I just want to mention I saw Jackie Mason in Times Square once.
Okay, oh, fun fact. That's topical. That's topical.
R.I.P. R.I.P.
Hey, real quick before it starts, I just want to say Jackie Mason is a comedy legend and also a psychotic Zionist. Go on.
Okay. Yes. Scott Snyder signed a massive deal with Comixology and blank. Is it A, DC, B, Dark Horse, or is it C, Marsha Warfield?
I think I got to go with A?
B? Dark Horse? Because we were just talking about it.
I was thinking about it, but I don't think I'm going to go there.
My raccoon behind you?
Pete, what are the odds is a raccoon behind me?
And let's very not high. Forget about Marsha Warfield's deal that she's recently signed.
Yeah, yeah. If you can sign with Marsha Warfield, you're killing it. All right, here we go. Question number two. What amazing actor is voicing Bruce Wayne in Batman Unburied? Is it A, Winston Duke, B, Greg Pak, or is it C, Frank Welker? So is it A, Winston Duke, or is it B, Greg Pak?
I gotta go with A.
A is correct.
Wow. Frank Welker would be pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's true. It was a fun.
Yeah, there were some real options in this one.
Yeah, yeah. Here we go. Last one. Jumanji meets blank. Is Jeff Lemire's a new book called Maze Book? Is it Jumanji meets A, horror, B, sci-fi, or is it C, Randy Quaid?
Oh God, so I it's hope either,
it's Randy Quaid. I mean,
it's either A, so you can get $25, or you could be completely wrong.
Well, Jumanji meets Randy Quaid is actually my upcoming project. I'm really upset that you spoiled it because we don't have the rights to either.
But you do have Quaid. You do have Quaid on
board. We got Quaid on board. He said he will do this or so any now, movie.
Can we talk about the plot of this? Because it's really cool. So it's a bunch of kids discover an old box of Randy Quaid in their basement. And they're like, I don't know, should we play this? So they play it.
They get sucked in.
Yeah, they get sucked into Randy Quaid, and it's like a whole Osmosis Jones type thing.
I was going to say, John Malkovich, but
all right. Yeah, Osmosis Jones, definitely the reference we all wanted there. I feel like Randy Quaid believes that board games do suck you in, so it may be just a documentary we could be filming.
Yep. And,
hey.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, you won it. You won it. Congratulations.
And thank you, Pete. Sorry, I missed your birthday.
Yeah, that hurt, man. That hurt.
I told you I had to go out of town.
He was partying with my dad. It was cool.
Now I had to go to a place where the vaccination rates were comfortably under 50%.
Yeah, down there you're a king, or in this case, a maleficent queen.
A misunderstood prince.
Nat, before we let you go, you have a show on Thursday people could check out, right?
I do, and if Mrs. Tyler or anyone else would like to watch that show, hi, Justin's mom. You and you only should know that I have a show called PowerPoint Roulette. It's this Thursday at Caveat in New York City, but it's also going to be a live stream for you people who are currently watching a live stream and therefore love watching live streams. And it's a show where comedians have to present PowerPoint presentations that they've never seen before. And it's very fun. And it's definitely an original concept that we came up with and no one's ever done before. So for those two reasons... ours is really good, though. We have a real scientist come on, and then a comedian has to present the scientist's real presentation, and then I interview them afterwards about how well they did. We have a rapper who's going to do a song inspired by a presentation. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. And Matt always runs a great show. He runs
Thank
a great
you,
show.
Justin.
It has for years, no matter what it is. Def check this out.
I agree.
Absolutely, and I'm dropping that link right here for all the live viewers. And I'll put it in the Patreon. If you guys don't subscribe to the Comic Book Club Patreon, you should probably do that just to get this link.
I'll even say where the show is. It's a Caveat here in New York City.
That's right.
In the tri-state area.
That's right.
7 p.m. this Thursday, July 29th at Caveat. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to figure it out in another time zone, you do the math.
Awesome, Nat. Congratulations on the gift card to Midtown Comics. We'll send that right off to you and have a great night. Enjoy Mistress of Evil.
Oh, I
streaming on Disney Plus.
Can't wait to check it out.
Okay,
yeah,
bye.
Yeah. Later.
All right. There we go.
I just wanted to say before
yes.
Kevin was right, it is Caddyshack 2.
was the movie you were paying tribute to that Jackie Mason replaced Rodney Dangerfield in.
Yep.
I believe it's known as everyone's favorite Caddyshack.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's got some great moments.
Does it? Name one.
I'm doing it right now where Dan Aykroyd is being like, no, I think you will be having, it's a very funny bit where he's been working the kind of food truck.
Mm, that does sound fun.
Mrs. Esterhaus.
Great. Very cool. As we all know, comics are cool. What comics are you guys looking forward to that are coming out this week? Pete.
Oh, man. I tell you what, there's a lot of great stuff. I have two. Superman Son of Kal-El number one, I was really impressed with, and Beta Ray Bill number five.
Yeah, that's the last issue of that title by Daniel Warren Johnson. You love him. Justin, what are you looking forward to?
DWJ.
Great issue. I mean, I talk about this book a lot, but and it's weird because I am the sort of fan of it on this podcast, but there's a new issue of Headlopper coming out tomorrow that's really good. Headlopper number 16. Mm-hmm. This series is super fun. It's quarterly by Andrew McLean and Jordy Belair, and it's like playing Zelda when you're a kid. It's that level of joy and pleasure watching these adventurers go through the business. Definitely pick it up. As the super fan, I say that.
I'm looking forward to Gru Meets Tarzan number one from Dark Horse Comics. I was obsessed with Gru when I was younger.
That makes sense.
And I'm very curious to check it out years later, see if it holds up in the same way. We're going to be talking about all of those titles in the Stack podcast that rolls out in the Comic Book Club feed and also in its own dedicated Stack feed Wednesday at 9 a.m. So definitely check that out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank Ira Marks for coming on to check out Shark Summer, which is out now. Also Jeffrey Brown, go check out A Total Waste of Space Time, also out now. Next week on the show, we're going to have two more great guests for you. Alex Schumacher will be here to talk about Mr. Butterchips. Also, John Lazar will be here to talk about Marguerite versus the Occupation. A couple of other things to plug that we got going on. You can check out Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We are delving into Phase 2 right now. We had our first episode going into Iron Man 3 with one of the actors featured in Iron Man 3, Adam Pally, who played Gary the Cameraman. Super fun podcast. Definitely check that out. Also, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast. We dropped a special episode yesterday of that, delving into the new trailer. And of course, episodes are coming back very soon. So definitely stay tuned for that. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to subscribe and support the show. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live. .com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, Mom. See you.
Good night, Miss Tyler.
Good night.
Justin will be right up. Justin will be back up. We're just finishing up the game, Miss Tyler.
Put my milk on the office.